hand, and he watched the snowflakes come crashing down to earth.
"You must hate me," he murmured. "Hate me and my court for our frivolity and mindlessness when so many horrible things are going on outside of the city. I heard about those butchered rebels and I'm ashamed," he said, leaning his head against the window.
He heard her rise and then slump into a chair. The words came out in a river, one flowing after the other, and he couldn't stop himself from speaking.
"I understand why you have such ease when killing my kind, and I don't blame you for it."
"Dorian," she said gently. The world outside the castle was dark.
"I know you'll never tell me," he continued,
voicing what he had wanted to say for some time.
"But I know something terrible happened to you when you were young. Something perhaps of my father's own doing. You have a right to hate Otterlin for seizing control of Terrasen as it did, for taking all of the countries, and the country of your friend."
He swallowed, his eyes stinging.
"You won't believe me, but I don't want to be a part of that. I can't call myself a man when I allow my father to encourage such unforgivable atrocities. Yet even if I pleaded for clemency on behalf of the conquered kingdoms, he wouldn't listen. Not in this world. This is the world where I only picked you to be my champion because I knew it would annoy my father."
She shook her head, but he kept going.
"But if I had refused to sponsor a champion, my father would have seen it as a sign of dissent, and I'm not yet enough of a man to stand against him like that. So I chose Otterlin's assassin to be my champion, because the choice of my champion was the only choice I had."
Yes, it was all clear now.
"Life shouldn't be like this," he said,
their eyes meeting as he gestured at the room.
And the world shouldn't be like this."
The assassin was silent, listening to the throbbing of her heart before she spoke. "I don't hate you," she said in little more than a whisper. He dropped into the chair across from her and put his head in a hand. He seemed remarkably lonely. "And I don't think you're like them. I'm sorry if I've hurt you. I'm joking most of the time."
"Hurt me?" he said. "You haven't hurt me. You've made things a little more entertaining."
She cocked her head. "Just a little?"
"Maybe a tad more than that."
He stretched out his legs.
"Oh, if only you could come to the Yulmus ball with me. Be grateful you can't attend."
"Why can't I attend? And what's the Yulmus ball?"
He groaned. "Nothing all that special. Just a masked ball that happens to be on Yulmus. And I think you know exactly why you can't come."
"You and Kaol really delight in ruining any fun I might have, don't you? I like attending parties."
"When you're my father's champion, you can attend all the balls you want."
She made a face. He wanted to tell her then that if he could, he would have asked her to go with him, that he wanted to spend time with her, that he thought of her even when they were apart, but he knew she would have laughed. The clock chimed midnight.
"I should probably go," he said, stretching his arms. "I have a day of council meetings to look forward to tomorrow, and I don't think Duke Parrington will be pleased if I'm half asleep for all of them."
Selena smirked. "Be sure to give the Duke my warmest regards."
There was no way she'd forgotten how the Duke had treated her that first day in Endovir. Dorian hadn't forgotten it either. And the thought of the Duke treating her like that again made him burn with cold rage.
Without thinking, he leaned down and kissed her cheek. She stiffened as his mouth touched her skin, and though the kiss was brief, he breathed in the scent of her.
Pulling away was surprisingly hard.
"Rest well, Selena," he said.
"Good night, Dorian." As he left, he wondered why she suddenly looked so sad, and why she'd pronounced his name not with tenderness, but with resignation. Selena stared at the moonlight as it streamed across the ceiling. A masked ball on Yulmus. Even if it was the most corrupt and ostentatious court in Aurelia, it sounded dreadfully romantic. And of course, she wasn't allowed to go. She let out a long sigh through her nose and tucked her hands beneath her head. Was that what Kaol had wanted to ask her before she vomited? A true invitation to the ball?
She shook her head. No, the last thing he'd ever do would be to invite her to a royal ball. Besides, both of them had more important things to worry about. Like whoever was killing the champions.
Perhaps she should have sent word to him about Kane's strange behavior earlier that afternoon.
Selena closed her eyes and smiled.
She could think of no nicer Yulmus gift than for Kane to be found dead the next morning.
Still, as the clock marked the passing hours, Selena kept her vigil, waiting, wondering what truly lurked in the castle, and unable to stop thinking of those 500 dead Ilwe rebels, buried in some unmarked grave.
Chapter 35. The next evening, Kaol Westfall stood on the second floor of the castle, looking over the courtyard. Below him, two figures slowly wove through the hedges. Selena's white cloak made her easy to spot, and Dorian could always be noticed by the empty circle of space around him. He should be down there, a foot behind, watching them, making sure she didn't seize Dorian and use him to escape. Logic and years of experience screamed at him to be with them, even though six guards trailed them. She was deceitful, cunning, vicious. But he couldn't make his feet move. With each day, he felt the barriers melting. He let them melt. Because of her genuine laugh. Because he caught her one afternoon sleeping with her face in the middle of a book. Because he knew that she would win. She was a criminal, a prodigy at killing, a queen of the underworld. And yet she was just a girl, sent at 17 to Endovir. It made him sick every time he thought about it. He'd been training with the guards at 17, but he'd still lived here, still had a roof over his head, and good food and friends. Dorian had been in the middle of courting Rosamund when he was that age, not caring about anything. But she, at 17, had gone to a death camp, and survived. He wasn't sure if he could survive in Dovir, let alone during the winter months. He'd never been whipped, never seen anyone die. He'd never been cold and starving. Selena laughed at something Dorian said. She'd survived in Dovir, and yet could still laugh. While it terrified him to see her down there, a hand's breadth from Dorian's unprotected throat, what terrified him even more was that he trusted her, and he didn't know what that meant about himself. Selena walked between the hedges and couldn't help the smile that spread across her face. They walked closely, but not close enough to touch. Dorian had found her just moments after dinner and invited her for a walk. In fact, he'd showed up so quickly after the servants cleared away her food that she might have thought he'd been waiting outside. Of course, it was due entirely to the cold that she longed to link arms with him and absorb his warmth. The white fur-lined cloak did little to keep the frigid air from freezing all of her. She could only imagine how Nehemia would react to such temperatures. But after learning about the fate of those rebels, the princess was spending most of her time in her rooms and had declined Selena's repeated offers to go for walks. It had been over 3 weeks since her last encounter with Elena, and she hadn't seen or heard her at all, despite the three tests she'd had, the most exciting of which being an obstacle course, which she passed with only a few minor scratches and bruises. Unfortunately, Paylor hadn't done so well, and had been sent home at long last. But he'd been lucky. Three other competitors had died. All found in forgotten hallways. All mutilated beyond recognition. Even Selena had taken to jumping at every strange sound. There were only six of them left now. Kane, Grave, Knox, a soldier, and Renault, a vicious mercenary who'd stepped up to replace Varen as Kane's right-hand man. Not surprisingly, Renault's favorite new activity was taunting Selena. She shoved thoughts of the murders aside as they strode past a fountain, and she caught Dorian giving her an admiring glance from the corner of his eye. Of course, she hadn't been thinking of Dorian when she chose such a fine lavender gown to wear tonight, or when she made sure her hair was so carefully arranged, or that her white gloves were spotless. "What to do now?" Dorian said. "We've walked twice around the garden."
"Don't you have princely duties to attend to?"
Selena winced as a gust of icy wind blew back her hood and froze her ears. When she recovered the hood, she found Dorian staring at her throat.
"What?"
she asked, pulling her cloak tightly around her.
"You always wear that necklace," he said. "Is it another gift?"
Though she wore gloves, he glanced at her hand, where the amethyst ring always sat, and the spark died from his eyes.
No. She covered the amulet with her hand. I found it in my jewelry box and liked the look of it, you insufferably territorial man.
It's very old-looking. Been robbing the royal coffer, have you?
He winked, but she didn't feel any warmth behind it. No, she repeated sharply. Even though a necklace wouldn't protect her from the murderer, and even though Elena had some agenda she was being cagey about, Selena wouldn't take it off. Its presence somehow comforted her in the long hours she sat up, watching her door. He continued staring at her hand until she lowered it from her throat. He studied the necklace.
When I was a boy, I used to read tales about the dawn of Otterlin. Gavin was my hero. I must have read every legend regarding the war with Erewhon.
How can he be that smart? He can't have figured it out so quickly. She tried her best to look innocently interested. And?
Elena, first queen of Otterlin, had a magical amulet. In the battle with the Dark Lord, Gavin and Elena found themselves defenseless against him. He was about to kill the princess when a spirit appeared and gave her the necklace. And when she put it on, Erewhon couldn't harm her. She saw the Dark Lord for what he was and called him by his true name. It surprised him so much that he became distracted, and Gavin slew him.
Dorian looked to the ground.
They called her necklace the Eye of Elena. It's been lost for centuries.
How strange it was to hear Dorian, son of the man who had banished and outlawed all traces of magic, talking about powerful amulets.
Still, she laughed as best she could.
And you think this trinket is the Eye? I think it'd be dust by now.
I suppose not, he said, and vigorously rubbed his arms for warmth. But I've seen a few illustrations of the Eye, and your necklace looks like it. Perhaps it's a replica.
Perhaps.
She quickly found another subject.
When's your brother arriving?
He looked skyward. I'm lucky. We received a letter this morning that snows in the mountains prevented Holland from coming home. He's stuck at school until after his spring term, and he's beside himself.
Your poor mother, Selena said, half smiling.
She'll probably send servants to deliver his Yulmus presents, regardless of the storm.
Selena didn't hear him, and though they talked for a good hour afterward, meandering through the grounds, she couldn't get her heart to calm. Elena had to have known someone would recognize her amulet, and if this was the real thing, the king could kill her on the spot for wearing not only an heirloom of his house, but something of power.
Yet again, she could only wonder what Elena's motives actually were.
Selena glanced from her book to the tapestry on the wall.
The chest of drawers remained where she'd shoved it in front of the passageway. She shook her head and returned to her book.
Though she scanned the lines, none of the words registered. What did Elena want with her?
Dead queens usually didn't come back to give orders to the living. Selena clenched her book.
It wasn't like she wasn't fulfilling Elena's command to win, either. She would have fought this hard to become the king's champion anyway.
And as for finding and defeating the evil in the castle, well, now that it seemed tied to who was murdering the champions, how could she not try to figure out where it was coming from? A door shut somewhere inside her rooms, and Selena jumped, the book flying from her hands. She grabbed the brass candlestick beside her bed, ready to leap off the mattress, but lowered it as Philippa's humming filtered through the doors to her bedroom. She groaned as she climbed out of the warmth of her bed to retrieve her book. It had fallen under the bed, and Selena knelt upon the icy floor, straining to reach the book. She couldn't feel it anywhere, so she grabbed the candle. She saw the book immediately, tucked against the back wall, but as her fingers grappled onto the cover, a glimmer of candlelight traced a white line across the floor beneath her bed. Selena yanked the book back to her and stood with a jolt. Her hands trembled as she pushed the bed out of position, her feet slipping on the half-frozen floor. It moved slowly, but eventually she had shifted it enough to see what had been sketched onto the floor beneath. Everything inside of her turned to ice.
Word marks.
Dozens of word marks had been drawn onto the floor with chalk. They formed a giant spiral, with a large mark in its center. Selena stumbled back, slamming into her dresser.
What was this?
She ran a shaking hand through her hair, staring at the center mark. She'd seen that mark. It had been etched on one side of Varen's body. Her stomach rising in her throat, she rushed to her nightstand and grabbed the pitcher of water atop it. Without a thought, she tossed the water onto the marks, then raced to her bathing chamber to draw more water. When the water had finished loosening the chalk, she took a towel and scrubbed the floor until her back ached and her legs and hands were frozen. Then, only then, did she throw on a pair of pants and a tunic and head out the door. Thankfully, the guards didn't say anything when she asked them to escort her to the library at midnight. They remained in the main room of the library as she set off through the stacks, heading toward the musty, forgotten alcove where she'd found the majority of the books on the word marks. She couldn't walk fast enough and kept looking over her shoulder. Was she next? What did any of it mean? She wrung her fingers. She rounded a corner, not 10 stacks from the alcove, and came to a halt. Nehemia, seated at a small desk, stared at her with wide eyes. Selena put a hand on her racing heart. "Damn," she said. "You gave me a fright." Nehemia smiled, but not very well. Selena cocked her head as she approached the table. "What are you doing here?" Nehemia demanded in Eelway. "I couldn't sleep." She shifted her eyes to the princess's book. That wasn't the book they used during their lessons. No, it was a thick, aging book, crammed with dense lines of text. "What are you reading?" Nehemia slammed the book shut and stood. "Nothing." Selena observed her face. Her lips were pursed, and the princess lifted her chin. "I thought you couldn't read at that level yet." Nehemia tucked the book into the crook of her arm. "Then you're like every ignorant fool in this castle, Lillian," she said with perfect pronunciation in the common tongue. Not giving her a chance to reply, the princess strode away. Selena watched her go. It didn't make sense. Nehemia couldn't read books that advanced, not when she still stumbled through lines of text. And Nehemia never spoke with that kind of flawless accent. And in the shadows behind the desk, a piece of paper had fallen between the wood and the stone wall. Easing it out, Selena unfolded the crumpled paper. She whirled around to the direction where Nehemia had disappeared. Her throat constricting, Selena tucked the piece of paper into her pocket and hurried back toward the great room, the word mark drawn on the paper burning a hole in her clothing. Selena rushed down a staircase, then strode along a hallway lined with books. No, Nehemia couldn't have played her like that. Nehemia wouldn't have lied day after day about how little she knew. Nehemia had been the one to tell her that the etchings in the garden were word marks. She knew what they were. She'd warned her to stay away from the word marks again and again because Nehemia was her friend, because Nehemia had wept when her people had been murdered, because she'd come to her for comfort. But Nehemia came from a conquered kingdom, and the king of Otterlin had ripped the crown off her father's head and stripped his title from him. And the people of Eelway were being kidnapped in the night and sold into slavery, right along with the rebels that rumor claimed Nehemia supported so fiercely. And 500 Eelway citizens had just been butchered. Selena's eyes stung as she spotted the guards loitering in armchairs in the great room. Nehemia had every reason to deceive them, to plot against them, to tear apart this stupid competition and send everyone into a tizzy. Who better to target than the criminals living here? No one would miss them, but the fear would seep into the castle. But why would Nehemia plot against her?
Chapter 36. Days passed without seeing Nehemia, and Selena kept her mouth shut about the incident to Kaol or Dorian or anyone who visited her chambers. She couldn't confront Nehemia, not without more concrete proof. Not without ruining everything. So she spent her spare time researching the word marks, desperate for a way to decipher them, to find those symbols, to learn what it all meant, and how it connected to the killer and the killer's beast. Amidst her worrying, another test passed without incident or embarrassment, though she couldn't say the same for the soldier who'd been sent home, and she kept up her intense training with Kaol and the other champions. There were 5 of them left now. The final test was 3 days away, and the duel 2 days after that.
Selena awoke on Yulmas morning and relished the silence. There was something inherently peaceful about the day, despite the darkness of her encounter with Nehemia. For the moment, the whole castle had quieted to hear the falling snow. Frost laced each window pane, a fire already crackled in the fireplace, and shadows of snowflakes drifted across the floor. It was as peaceful and lovely a winter morning as she could imagine. She wouldn't ruin it with thoughts of Nehemia, or of the duel, or of the ball she wasn't allowed to attend tonight. No, it was Yulmas morning, and she would be happy. It didn't feel like a holiday to celebrate the darkness that gave birth to the spring light, nor did it feel like a holiday to celebrate the birth of the goddess's firstborn son. It was simply a day when people were more courteous, looked twice at a beggar in the street, remembered that love was a living thing. Selena smiled and rolled over, but something got in her way. It was crinkly and harsh against her face, and had the distinct odor of... candy? A large paper bag sat on a pillow, and she found that it was filled with all sorts of confectionery goodies. There was no note, not even a name scribbled on the bag. With a shrug and glowing eyes, Selena pulled out a handful of sweets. Oh, how she adored candy. Selena issued a jolly laugh and crammed some of the candy into her mouth. One by one, she chewed through the assortment, and she closed her eyes and breathed in deeply as she tasted all the flavors and textures. When she finally stopped chewing, her jaw ached. She emptied the contents of the bag onto the bed, ignoring the dunes of sugar that poured out with it, and surveyed the land of goodness before her. All of her favorites were there. Chocolate-covered gummies, chocolate almond bark, berry-shaped chews, gem-shaped hard sugar, peanut brittle, plain brittle, sugar lace, frosted red licorice, and, most importantly, chocolate. She popped a hazelnut truffle into her mouth. "Someone," she said in between chews, "is very good to me." She paused to examine the bag again. Who had sent it? Maybe Dorian. Certainly not Nehemia or Kaol. Nor the frost fairies that delivered presents to good children. They'd stopped coming to her when she'd first drawn blood from another human being. Maybe Nox. He liked her well enough. "Miss Selena!" Philippa exclaimed from the doorway, gaping. "Happy Yulmas, Philippa," she said. "Care for a candy?" Philippa stormed toward Selena. "Happy Yulmas indeed! Look at this bed! Look at this mess!" Selena winced. "Your teeth are red!" Philippa cried. She reached for the hand mirror that Selena kept by her bed and held it for the assassin to see. Sure enough, her teeth were tinged with crimson. She ran her tongue over her teeth, then tried to brush away the stains with a finger. They remained. "Damn those sugar suckers!" "Yes," Philippa snapped. "And that's chocolate all over your mouth! Even my grandson doesn't eat his candy like this." Selena laughed. "You have a grandson?" "Yes, and he can eat his food without getting it on the bed, on his teeth, and on his face." Selena pushed back the covers, sugar spraying into the air. "Have a candy, Philippa." "It's 7 in the morning. Philippa swept the sugar into her cupped palm. "You'll make yourself sick." "Sick? Who can get sick from candy?" Selena made a face and exposed her crimson teeth. "You look like a demon," said Philippa. "Just don't open your mouth and no one will notice." "You and I both know that's not possible." To her surprise, Philippa laughed. "Happy Yulmas, Selena," she said. Hearing Philippa call her by her name sent an unexpected burst of pleasure through her. "Come," the servant clucked. "Let's get you dressed. The ceremony begins at 9. Philippa bustled toward the dressing room, and Selena watched her go. Her heart was big and as red as her teeth. There was good in people, deep down. There was always a shred of good. There had to be. Selena emerged a while later, clad in a solemn-looking green dress that Philippa had deemed the only appropriate gown for temple attendance. Selena's teeth were, of course, still red, and now she felt queasy as she stared at the bag of candy. However, she quickly forgot about her sickness when she saw Dorian Havilliard sitting at the table in her bedroom with crossed legs. He wore a beautiful white and gold jacket. "Are you my present, or is there something in that basket at your feet?" she asked. "If you'd like to unwrap me," he said, lifting the large wicker basket onto the table. "We still have an hour until the temple service." She laughed. "Happy Yule, Mastorian. And to you as well. I can see that I... Are your teeth red?" She clamped her mouth shut, shaking her head in violent protestation. He grabbed her nose and pinched it closed, and try as she might, she could not dislodge his fingers. She opened her mouth, and he burst into laughter. "Been eating candies, have you?"
"You sent those?"
She kept her mouth closed as much as possible.
"Of course."
He picked up the brown bag of candy on the table. "What's your..." He trailed off as he weighed the bag in his hands. "Didn't I give you 3 pounds of candy?" She smiled impishly. "You ate half the bag."
"Was I supposed to save it?"
"I would have liked some."
"You never told me that."
"Because I didn't expect you to consume all of it before breakfast."
She snatched the bag from him and put it on the table.
"Well, that just shows poor judgment on your part, doesn't it?"
Dorian opened his mouth to reply, but the bag of candy tipped over and spilled across the table. Selena turned just in time to see the slender golden snout protruding from the basket, inching toward the candy.
"What is that?" she asked flatly.
Dorian grinned.
"A Yulmus present for you."
The assassin flipped back the lid of the basket. The nose instantly shot inward, and Selena found the strange golden-haired pup quivering in a corner with a red bow around her neck.
"Oh, puppy,"
she crooned and petted her. The dog trembled, and she glared at Dorian over her shoulder.
"What did you do, you buffoon?" she hissed.
Dorian threw his hands in the air. "It's a gift! I almost lost my arm, and more important parts, trying to put that bow on. And then she howled all the way up here." Selena looked piteously at the dog, which was now licking the sugar off her fingers.
"What am I going to do with her? You couldn't find an owner, so you decided to give her to me?"
"No," he said. "Well, yes. But she didn't seem so frightened when you were around, and I remembered how my hounds followed you when we traveled from Endovir. Perhaps she'll trust you enough to become adapted to humans. Some people have those kinds of gifts."
She raised an eyebrow as he paced.
"It's a lousy present, I know. I should have gotten you something better."
The dog peered up at Selena. Her eyes were a golden brown color, like molten caramel. She seemed to be waiting for a blow to fall. She was a beautiful thing, and her huge paws hinted that she might someday grow large and swift. A slight smile spread on Selena's lips. The dog swished her tail, once, then another time.
"She's yours," Dorian said, "if you want her."
"What shall I do with her if I'm sent back to Endovir?"
"I worry about that."
Selena stroked her folded, velvet-soft ears, then ventured low enough to scratch her chin. The pup's tail wagged in earnest.
Yes, there was life in her.
"So you don't want her?" he muttered.
"Of course I want her," Selena said,
then realized what the implications would be. "But I want her trained. I don't want her urinating on everything and chewing on furniture and shoes and books. And I want her to sit here when I tell her to, and lay down and roll over and whatever it is that dogs do. And I want her to run. Run with the other dogs when they're practicing. I want her to put those long legs to use."
Dorian crossed his arms as Selena scooped up the dog. "That's a long list of demands. Perhaps I should have bought you jewelry after all."
"When I'm training..."
She kissed the pup's soft head, and the dog nestled her cold nose against Selena's neck. "I want her in the kennels training as well. When I return in the afternoon, she may be brought to me. I'll keep her in the night." Selena held the dog at eye level. The dog kicked her legs in the air. "If you ruin any of my shoes," she said to the pup, "I'll turn you into a pair of slippers." "Understood?" The dog stared at her, her wrinkled brow lifting, and Selena smiled and set her down on the floor. She began sniffing about, though she stayed far from Dorian, and she soon disappeared beneath the bed. The assassin lifted the dust ruffle to peer underneath. Thankfully, the word marks had been washed away entirely. The dog continued her exploration, sniffing everywhere.
"I'll have to think of a name for you," she said to her, and then stood. "Thank you," she said to Dorian.
It's a lovely gift.
He was kind, unnaturally kind for someone of his upbringing. He had a heart, she realized, and a conscience. He was different from the others. Timidly, almost clumsily, the assassin strode over to the crown prince and kissed him on the cheek. His skin was surprisingly hot, and she wondered if she'd kissed him properly as she pulled away and found his eyes bright and wide. Had she been sloppy? Too wet? Were her lips sticky from the candy? She hoped he wouldn't wipe his cheek.
"I'm sorry I don't have a present for you," she said.
I didn't expect you to." He blushed madly and glanced at the clock. "I have to go. I'll see you at the ceremony, or perhaps tonight after the ball. I'll try to get away as early as I can, though I bet that without you there, Nehemia will probably do the same, so it won't look bad if I leave early, too." She'd never seen him babble like this.
"Enjoy yourself," she said as he took a step back and almost crashed into the table.
"I'll see you tonight, then," he said, "after the ball." She hid her smile behind a hand. Had her kiss thrown him into such a tizzy? "Goodbye, Selena." He looked back when he reached the door. She smiled at him, flashing her red teeth, and he laughed before he bowed and disappeared. Alone in her rooms, Selena was about to see what her new companion was up to when the thought struck her. Nehemia would be at the ball. It was a simple enough thought at first, but then worse thoughts followed it. Selena began pacing. If Nehemia were truly somehow behind the champion's murders, and worse, had some feral beast at her command to destroy them, and also just learned about the massacre of her people, then what better place to punish Otterlin than at the ball, where so many of its royals would be celebrating and unguarded? It was irrational, Selena knew, but what if Nehemia unleashed whatever creature she controlled at the ball? Fine, she wouldn't mind if Caltaine and Parrington met horrible deaths, but Dorian would be there. And Kaol. Selena strode into her bedroom, wringing her fingers. She couldn't warn Kaol, because if she were wrong, then it would ruin not just her friendship with Nehemia, but also the princess's efforts at diplomacy. But she couldn't just do nothing. Oh, she shouldn't even be thinking like this. But she'd seen friends do terrible things before, and it had become safer for her to believe the worst. She'd witnessed firsthand how far a need for revenge could drive someone. Perhaps Nehemia wouldn't do anything. Perhaps she was just being paranoid and ridiculous. But if something happened tonight... Selena opened the doors to her dressing room, surveying the glittering gowns hanging along the walls. Kaol would be beyond furious if she infiltrated the ball. But she could handle it. She could handle it if he decided to throw her in the dungeons for a little while, too. Because somehow, the thought of him getting hurt, or worse, made her willing to risk just about anything.
"Will you not even smile on Yulmus?" she asked Kaol as they walked out of the castle and toward the glass temple at the center of the eastern garden.
"If my teeth were crimson, I wouldn't be smiling at all," he said. "Be content with an occasional grimace." She flashed her teeth at him, then closed her mouth as several courtiers strode past, servants in tow. "I'm surprised you're not complaining more."
Complaining about what? Why did Kaol never joke with her as Dorian did?
Perhaps he truly didn't find her attractive. The possibility of it stung more than she would have liked. "About not going to the ball tonight."
He glanced sidelong at her. He couldn't know what she was planning. Philippa had promised to keep it a secret, promised not to ask questions when Selena requested she find a gown and matching mask.
"Well, apparently you still don't trust me enough." She meant to sound sassy, but couldn't keep the snap from her tone. She couldn't waste her time worrying about someone who clearly had no interest in her beyond the ridiculous competition. Kaol snorted, though a hint of a smile appeared on his lips. At least the crown prince never made her feel stupid or rotten. Kaol just provoked her, though he had his good side, too. And she had no idea when she'd stopped loathing him so much. Still, she knew he wouldn't be pleased when she appeared at the ball tonight. Mask or no mask, Kaol would know it was her. She just hoped he wouldn't punish her too severely.
Chapter 37. Seated in a pew in the rear of the spacious temple, Selena kept her mouth closed so tightly that it hurt. Her teeth were still red, She didn't need anyone else noticing. The temple was a beautiful space, built entirely from glass. The limestone covering the floor was all that remained of the original stone temple, which the King of Otterlin had destroyed when he decided to replace it with the glass structure. Two columns of about 100 rosewood pews stretched beneath a vaulted glass ceiling that let in so much light that no candles were needed during the day. Snow lay piled upon the translucent roof, casting patterns of sunshine throughout. As the walls were also glass, the stained windows above the altar appeared to hover in midair. She stood to peer over the heads of those sitting in front of her. Dorian and the Queen sat in the first pew, a row of guards immediately behind. The Duke and Caltaine sat on the other side of the aisle, and behind them were Nehemia and several others she didn't recognize. She didn't spy Nox, or the other remaining champions, or Cain. They'd let her come to this, but not to the ball? "Sit down," Kael growled, pulling at her green gown. She made a face and dropped onto the cushioned bench. Several people stared at her. They wore gowns and jackets so elaborate that she wondered if the ball had been moved to lunchtime. The High Priestess walked onto the stone platform and raised her hands above her head. The folds of her midnight blue gossamer robe fell around her, and her white hair was long and unbound. An eight-pointed star was tattooed upon her brow, in a shade of blue that matched her gown, its sharp lines extending to her hairline. "Welcome all. And may the blessings of the goddess and all her gods be upon you." Her voice echoed across the chamber to reach even those in the back. Selena stifled a yawn. She respected the gods, if they existed, and when it suited her to ask for their assistance. But religious ceremonies were brutal. It had been years and years since she'd attended anything of this sort, and as the High Priestess lowered her arms and stared at the crowd, the assassin shifted in her seat. It would be the usual prayers, then the Yulmas prayers, then the sermon, then the songs, and then the procession of the gods. "You're squirming already," Kael said under his breath. "What time is it?" she whispered, and he pinched her arm. "Today," the priestess said, "is the day on which we celebrate the end and the beginning of the great cycle. Today is the day on which the great goddess gave birth to her firstborn, Lumas, Lord of the Gods. With his birth, love was brought into Aurelia, and it banished the chaos that arose from the gates of the Word." A weight pressed on her eyelids. She had woken up so early, and slept so little after that encounter with Nehemia. Unable to stop, Selena wandered into the land of sleep. "Get up," Kael snarled into her ear. "Now." She sat up with a jolt, the world bright and foggy. Several lesser nobles in her pew laughed silently. She gave Kael an apologetic look and turned her gaze to the altar. The High Priestess had finished her sermon, and the songs of Yulmas were over. She only had to sit through the procession of the gods, and then she would be free. "How long was I asleep?" she whispered. He didn't respond. "How long was I asleep?" she asked again, and noticed a hint of red in his cheeks. "You were asleep, too?"
"Until you began drooling on my shoulder."
"Such a self-righteous young man," she cooed, and he poked her leg. "Pay attention." A choir of priestesses stepped off the platform. Selena yawned, but nodded with the rest of the congregation as the choir gave their blessings. An organ sounded, and everyone leaned to stare down the aisle for the procession of the gods. The sound of pattering footsteps filled the temple, and the congregation stood. Each blindfolded child was no more than 10 years old, and though they looked rather foolish dressed in the costumes of the gods, there was something charming about it. Every year, 9 children were chosen. If a child stopped before you, you received the blessings of the god, and the small gift the child carried as a symbol of the god's favor. Farnor, god of war, stopped at the front row near Dorian, but then moved to the right, across the aisle, to give the miniature silver sword to Duke Parrington.
Not surprising.
Clad in glistening wings, Lumas, god of love, strode past her. She crossed her arms.
What a foolish tradition.
Diana, goddess of the hunt and maidens, approached. Selena shifted from one foot to the other, wishing she hadn't demanded that Kaol give her the aisle seat. To her dread and dismay, the girl stopped before her and removed the blindfold. She was a pretty little thing. Her blonde hair hung in loose curls, and her brown eyes were flecked with green. The girl smiled at Selena and reached to touch the assassin's forehead. Selena's back began sweating as she felt hundreds of eyes upon her.
May Diana, the huntress and protector of the young, bless and keep you this year. I bestow upon you this golden arrow as a symbol of her power and good graces.
The girl bowed as she extended the slender arrow. Kaol prodded her back, and Selena grabbed the arrow.
Yulma's blessings to you,
the girl said, and Selena nodded her thanks. She gripped the arrow as the girl bounded away. It couldn't be used, of course, but it was made of solid gold.
It'll fetch a nice price.
With a shrug, Selena handed the arrow to Kaol.
I suppose I'm not allowed to have this, she said, sitting down with the rest of the crowd.
He put it back in her lap. I wouldn't want to test the gods. She stared at him for a moment.
Did he look different? Something had changed in his face.
Nudging him with an elbow, Selena grinned.
Chapter 38. Yards of silk, clouds of powder, brushes, combs, pearls, and diamonds glistened before Selena's eyes. As Philippa arranged the last strand of Selena's hair neatly around her face, secured a mask over her eyes and nose, and placed a small crystal tiara on her head, Selena couldn't help but feel, despite herself, like a princess. Philippa knelt to polish the lump of crystal on Selena's silver slippers.
If I didn't know better, I'd call myself a fairy queen. It's like...
Philippa caught herself before she spoke the word the King of Otterland had so effectively outlawed, then quickly said,
I barely recognize you.
Good, Selena said. This would be her first ball where she wasn't there to kill someone. True, she was mostly going to make sure Nehemia didn't hurt herself or the court, but a ball was a ball. Maybe if she was lucky, she could dance a little.
Are you certain this is a good idea?
Philippa asked quietly, standing.
Captain Westfall won't be pleased.
Selena gave the servant a sharp look.
I told you not to ask questions.
Philippa huffed.
Just don't tell them I helped you when you get dragged back here.
Checking her irritation, Selena strode to the mirror, Philippa bustling after her. Standing before her reflection, Selena wondered if she was seeing correctly.
This is the most beautiful dress I've ever worn, she admitted, her eyes filling with light.
It was not pure white, but rather a grayish offset, and its wide skirts and bodice were encrusted with thousands of minuscule crystals that reminded Selena of the surface of the sea. Swirls of silk thread on the bodice made rose-like designs that could have passed for a work by any master painter. A border of ermine lined the neck and provided slender sleeves that only covered her shoulders. Tiny diamond droplets fell from her ears, and her hair was curled and swept up onto her head, strands of pearls woven in. Her gray silk mask had been secured tightly against her face. It wasn't fashioned after anything, but the delicate crystal and pearl whorls had been crafted by a skilled hand.
You could win the hand of a king looking like that, said Philippa. Or perhaps a crown prince will do.
Where in Aurelia did you find this dress?
Selena murmured.
Don't ask questions, clucked the old woman.
Selena smirked.
Fair enough.
She wondered why her heart now felt too large for her body, and why she was so unstable in her shoes. She had to remember why she was going. She had to keep her wits about her. The clock struck 9, and Philippa glanced toward the doorway, giving Selena the opportunity to slip her makeshift knife down her bodice without being noticed.
How exactly are you going to get to the ball? I don't think your guards will let you just walk out.
Selena shot Philippa a sly look.
We're both going to pretend that I was invited by the Crown Prince, and right now you are going to make such a fuss about me being late that they won't object.
Philippa fanned herself, her face reddening. Selena grasped her hand.
I promise, she said.
If I get into any sort of trouble, I will swear to my last breath that you were deceived by me and had no knowledge of anything.
But are you going to get into trouble?
Selena gave her most winning smile.
No.
I'm just sick of being left to sit around while they have grand parties. It wasn't quite a lie.
God's help me,
Philippa muttered, and took a deep breath. Go! She suddenly cried, herding Selena toward the door to the hall. Go, you'll be late! She was a bit too loud to be totally convincing, but Philippa flung open the door to the hallway. The Crown Prince won't be pleased if you're late! Selena paused in the doorway, nodding at the 5 guards who were posted outside, then looked back at Philippa.
Thank you, Selena said.
No more dawdling, the servant woman cried, and almost knocked Selena off her feet as she pushed her out the doorway and slammed it shut. Selena turned to the guards.
You look nice,
one of them, Ress, said shyly.
Off to the ball,
grinned another.
Save a dance for me, will you?
The third added. Not one of them questioned her. Selena smiled and took Ress's arm as he extended it to her. She tried not to laugh when he puffed out his chest. But as they neared the great hall and the sounds of a waltz could be heard, a swarm of bees took flight in her stomach. She couldn't forget why she was here. She'd played this part in the past, but it had ended in killing a stranger, not comforting a friend. The red and gold glass doors appeared, and she could see the wreaths and candles that bedecked the massive hall. It would have been easier if she could have slipped into the ball through a side door and remained unnoticed, but she hadn't had time to go exploring through the secret tunnels to find another way out of her rooms, and she certainly couldn't find another way into the ball now without raising suspicions. Ress stopped and bowed.
This is where I leave you,
he said as seriously as he could, though he kept looking at the ball that lay at the foot of the stairs.
Have a lovely night, Miss Sardothian.
Thank you, Ress.
She felt an urge to vomit and run back to her rooms. Instead, she graciously nodded her farewell. She just had to make it down the stairs and find a way to convince Kael to let her stay. Then she could keep an eye on Nehemia all night. Her shoes seemed frail, and Selena took a few steps back, ignoring the guards at the door as she lifted her feet high and set them down to test the strength of the shoes. When she was assured that not even a jump through the air could snap the heel, she approached the top of the stairs. Tucked into her bodice, the makeshift knife poked her skin. She prayed to the goddess, to every god she knew, to the word, to whatever was responsible for her fate, that she wouldn't have to use it. Selena squared her shoulders and stepped forward.
What was she doing here?
Dorian almost dropped his drink as he saw Selena Sardothian atop the stairs. Even with the mask, he recognized her. She might have her faults, but Selena never did anything half-heartedly. She'd outdone herself with that dress. But what was she doing here? He couldn't tell if it was a dream or reality until several heads, then many, turned to look. Though the waltz was playing, those not dancing quieted themselves as the mysterious masked girl lifted her skirts and took a step, then another. Her dress was made of stars plucked from the sky, and the whorls of crystals in her gray mask glittered.
Who is that?
Breathed a young courtier beside him. She looked at no one as she descended the staircase, and even the Queen of Otterland stood to see the late arrival, Nehemia also rising from her seat beside her. Had Selena lost her mind?
Walk to her. Take her hand.
But his feet were leaden, and Dorian could do nothing except watch her. His skin flushed beneath his small black mask. He didn't know why, but seeing her made him feel like a man. She was something out of a dream in which he was not a spoiled young prince, but a king. She reached the bottom of the stairs, and Dorian took a step forward. But someone had already arrived, and Dorian clenched his jaw tight enough for it to hurt as she smiled and bowed to Kael. The captain of the guard, who hadn't bothered to wear a mask, extended his hand. Selena stared only at Kael with those starlit eyes, and her long white fingers floated through the air to meet his. The crowd began chattering as Kael led her from the stairs, and they disappeared into the throng. Whatever conversation they were about to have, it wasn't going to be pleasant. He'd be better off staying out of it.
Please, said another courtier, tell me that Kaol doesn't suddenly have a wife.
Captain Westfall, said the courtier who had spoken earlier, why would a pretty thing like that marry a guard?
Remembering who stood beside him, he glanced at Dorian, who was still staring wide-eyed at the stairs.
Who is she, Your Highness? Do you know her?
No, I don't,
whispered Dorian, and walked away. The waltz was driving, and so loud she had difficulty hearing herself think as Kaol pulled her into a shadowy alcove. Not surprisingly, he hadn't worn a mask. It would be too silly for him, which made the fury on his face all too visible.
So, he seethed, holding tightly to her wrist. Do you want to tell me how you got it into your mind that this was a good idea?
She tried shaking off his hand, but he wouldn't let go. Across the great hall, Nehemia sat with the Queen of Otterlin, occasionally glancing in Selena's direction. Because she was nervous, or just surprised to see her.
Relax, she hissed at the captain of the guard. I only want to have some fun.
Fun? Crashing a royal ball is your idea of fun?
Arguing wouldn't help. She could tell that his anger was mostly about being embarrassed that she'd managed to slip out of her rooms in the first place. So she gave him a pitiful pout.
I was lonely.
He choked.
You couldn't spend one evening on your own?
She twisted her wrist out of his grasp.
Knox is here, and he's a thief. How could you let him come? With all this jewelry flashing about, and not me. How can I be the king's champion if you don't trust me?
Actually, that was a question she really wanted to know the answer to. Kaol covered his face with a hand and let out a long, long sigh. She tried not to smile. She'd won.
If you take one step out of line.
She grinned in earnest.
Consider it your Yulmas present to me.
Kaol gave her a weighing look, but slumped his shoulders.
Please don't make me regret this.
She patted his cheek, sweeping past him.
I knew I liked you for some reason.
He said nothing, but followed her back into the crowd. She'd been to masked balls before, but there was still something unnerving about not being able to see the faces of those around her. Most of the court, Dorian included, wore masks of varying sizes, shapes, and colors, some of simple design, others elaborate and animal-shaped. Nehemia still sat with the queen, wearing a gold and turquoise mask with a lotus motif. They appeared to be engaged in polite conversation, and Nehemia's guard stood to the side of the dais, already looking bored. Kaol kept close to her as she found an empty spot in the crowd and stopped. It was a good vantage point. She could see everything from here. The dais, the main stairs, the dance floor. Dorian was dancing with a small brunette with outrageously large breasts that he took no pains to avoid glancing at every so often. Hadn't he noticed her arrival? Even Parrington had seen her when Kaol dragged her into that corner. Thankfully, the captain had subtly moved her away before she had to interact with him. Across the room, she met Knox's eye. He was flirting with a young woman wearing a dove mask, and he raised his glass in salute before turning back to the girl. He'd opted for a blue mask that concealed only his eyes.
Well, try not to have too much fun, Kaol said beside her, crossing his arms.
Hiding her scowl, Selena crossed her arms as well and began her vigil. An hour later, Selena was beginning to curse herself for being a fool. Nehemia was still sitting with the queen and hadn't looked again in Selena's direction. How had she even considered that Nehemia, of all people, would attack everyone? Selena's face burned with shame beneath the mask. She didn't deserve to call herself a friend. All the dead champions and mysterious evil powers and this ridiculous competition had made her go mad. Selena smoothed the fur on her dress, frowning slightly. Kaol remained beside her, saying nothing. Though he'd allowed her to stay, she doubted he'd soon forget this. Or that the guards wouldn't get the tongue-lashing of their lives later tonight. Selena straightened as Nehemia suddenly rose from her seat beside the queen's throne, her guard snapping to attention. She bowed her head to the queen, the light of the chandeliers making her mask glisten, and then strode off the dais.
Selena felt each of her heartbeats hammering in her veins as Nehemia wove through the crowd, her guards close behind, and halted in front of Selena and Kaol.
"You look beautiful, Lillian,"
Nehemia said in the common tongue, her accent as thick as it had ever been. It felt like a slap in the face. She'd spoken with perfect fluency that night in the library. Was she warning Selena to keep quiet about it?
"As do you," Selena said tightly. "Are you enjoying the ball?"
Nehemia played with a fold in her dress. And from the look of the rich blue fabric, it was probably a gift from the Queen of Otterlin.
"Yes, but I'm not feeling well," the princess said. "I'm going back to my rooms."
Selena gave her a stiff nod. "I hope you feel better," was all she could think of to say. Nehemia looked at her for a long moment, her eyes shining with what seemed like pain, and then left. Selena watched her walk up the stairs, and didn't tear her gaze away until the princess was gone. Kaol cleared his throat.
"Do you want to tell me what that was all about?"
"None of your business," she replied. Something could still happen, even if Nehemia wasn't here, something could happen. But no, Nehemia wouldn't repay pain with more pain. She was too good for that. Selena swallowed hard. The makeshift knife in her bodice felt like a dead weight. Even if Nehemia wasn't going to hurt anyone tonight, that didn't prove her innocence.
"What's wrong?" Kaol pressed.
Forcing herself to push aside her shame and worry, Selena lifted her chin. With Nehemia gone, she still had to keep watch. But maybe she could attempt to have a little fun, too.
"With you scowling at everyone, no one will ask me to dance."
Kaol's dark brows rose.
"I'm not scowling at everyone."
Even as he said it, she spotted him frowning at a passing courtier who looked too long in Selena's direction.
"Stop it," she hissed. "No one will ever ask me to dance if you keep doing that."
He gave her an exasperated look and strode off. She followed him to the border of the dance floor.
"Here,"
he said, standing at the edge of the sea of swirling gowns.
"If anyone wants to ask you to dance, you're in plain sight."
From this spot, she could also still make sure no feral beasts were about to rip into the crowd. But he didn't need to know that. She glanced at him.
"Would you like to dance with me?"
He laughed.
"With you? No."
She looked at the marble floor, her chest tight.
"You needn't be so cruel."
"Cruel? Selena Parrington is just over there. I'm sure he's not happy about you being here, so I wouldn't risk drawing his attention any more than necessary."
"Coward!"
Kaol's eyes softened.
"If he weren't here, I would have said yes."
"I can easily arrange that, you know."
He shook his head as he adjusted the lapel on his black tunic. Just then, Dorian waltzed by, sweeping the brunette with him. He didn't even glance at her.
"Anyway,"
Kaol added, jerking his chin at Dorian,
"I think you have far more attractive suitors vying for your attention. I'm boring company to keep."
"I don't mind being here with you."
"I'm sure you don't,"
Kaol said dryly, though he met her stare.
"I mean it. Why aren't you dancing with anyone? Aren't there ladies whom you like?"
"I'm the captain of the guard. I'm not exactly a catch for any of them."
There was some sorrow in his eyes, though it was well concealed.
"Are you mad? You're better than everyone in here. And you're very handsome," she said, taking his hand in her free one.
There was beauty in Kaol's face, and strength, and honor, and loyalty. She stopped hearing the crowd, and her mouth became dry as he stared at her.
How had she missed it for so long?
"You think so?"
he said after a moment, looking at their clasped hands. She tightened her grasp.
"Why, if I wasn't..."
"Why aren't you two dancing?"
Kaol dropped her hand. She had difficulty turning away from him.
"And with whom would I dance, Your Highness?"
Dorian was alarmingly handsome in his pewter tunic. One might say it matched her dress.
"You look radiant,"
he said.
"And you look radiant as well, Kaol."
He winked at his friend. Then Dorian's gaze met hers, and Selena's blood turned into shooting stars.
"Well, do I need to lecture you about how stupid it was to sneak into the ball,
or can I just ask you to dance with me instead?
I don't think that's a good idea, Kaol said.
Why? They asked in unison. Dorian stepped a little closer to her. Even though she was ashamed of herself for